Welcome to Careers in Your Ears, the careers podcast for PhD students and research staff produced here at King's College London. I'm Anna Favalesa, one of the team of specialist careers consultants here at King's working with our researchers. Today, I'm joined by Becky Iapolo and Kate Murray from Cambridge University, who've kindly agreed to talk to us about narrative CVs and the ARC research project. It's lovely to have you both here. Perhaps we could start with some introductions. So Becky, would you like to tell us a bit about you?
Thanks, Anna, and thanks for the invitation to be here. My name's Becky, and I'm a researcher on the Action Research on Research Culture project at Cambridge. I specialize in doing research and evaluations for policymakers about science, the science and innovation sector.
That's great. Thank you very much. And Kate?
Well, hi, Anna. It's lovely to be back on Careers in Your Ears. Thank you so much for the invitation. So many of you might remember my name as Careers Consultant for Researchers at King's, and I have that role at Cambridge Career Service now, but I'm primarily working with Becky and other colleagues on the ARC project, which is researching various aspects of researcher careers.
That's brilliant. Thanks, Kate. And it is, as you say, lovely to have you back and to have you both here.
Thank you. It
would be really good, I think, to first maybe just have a bit more understanding about what the ARC project is. I know that it's got a lot of researchers in the title. Becky, would you like to tell us about it?
Definitely. While research culture does include a lot of different things, but the ARC project is focusing on its three separate aspects of research culture. That's the recruitment, development, and retention of postdoctoral researchers at Cambridge. And for those that are still becoming familiar with the term research culture, it's really often referring to, again, lots of different aspects of improving the research environment, all trying to, you know, address, there's lots of different problems that many have identified, things like an over-reliance on metrics or poor leadership and management, a lack of job security, unhealthy competition, all sorts of different team dynamics that can be problematic. So that research culture is really the umbrella term that combines initiatives that are aimed at addressing those problematic areas. So at Cambridge, we're, it's a lot of things to try and cover. So we have three specific sub-projects that we're working on. The first one is trying to understand whether narrative CVs could have an impact on which postdocs get shortlisted for advertised roles. Mm-hmm. The second project is related to trying to understand how we can foster better relationships between postdocs and their managers while they're at Cambridge. Mm-hmm. And the third project is trying to better understand the job characteristics that postdocs really value when they think about what their next role is going to be.
That's great to hear about that going, because I feel like those are conversations that we're having all the time. And we know that lots of institutions are coming up with different ways of doing research culture. But how great to have a project that's looking at what happens when you try and make those interventions and what might be best. I think that's lovely. So I think we're going to focus this particular episode on narrative CVs, because I feel as though it's something that we've definitely seen an increasing number of people at King's are having to tackle. And I think there's a big range of awareness of them, from no awareness to, you know, seeing them all the time. So, Kate, I was wondering if you could perhaps tell us a bit more about what a narrative CV is and why it's been introduced.
Sure. Yeah. And I think you're really right to focus in, Anna, on the fact that some people are quite au fait with the idea of narrative CVs, and other people really haven't had an opportunity or haven't realised perhaps that they need to start getting their heads around what a narrative CV is. So we've said already, Becky's outlined some of the ways by which research culture, some of the issues come from this kind of very narrow reliance on metrics. And of course, we know that that's often measured through researchers' publication record and the amount of money they've brought in. So all of those things are the kinds of things that the researchers get measured in, the kind of excellence, that sort of thing. But quite a lot of researchers, for various reasons related to perhaps problems with their research or structural inequalities that mean that they're not able to access funding. Some of them just cannot build up the kind of public publication record or attract the big grants that would get them noticed and enable them to progress in ways that they might like to in an academic career. So and indeed other academics just spend so much time doing the other bits that are important in an academic's life. So if you're head of departments or you're the person that does a lot of teaching in your department, something like that, then you might not have time to do all of those things that lead to those more metric based ways of being evaluated. So narrative CVs are an attempt to be able to surface all of the things which academics do in a sort of structured way. You could consider them as a structured personal statement, in fact, and enable people to write about themselves in the, you could define it as a more holistic kind of way, to really be able to talk about all of the things that they do, whether that's their contribution to developing their team, which is so-called module 2 in the UKRI specific version of narrative CV. And I suppose we should say here that narrative CV comes in lots of different forms. It originates in the US as something called a bio sketch, and then was brought to Britain by the Royal Society. Different people on the European continent have different versions. In Switzerland, for example, you focus on three main achievements. So the narrative bit of narrative CV is about describing things and different funders and different recruiting people, if that's how they're being used, and we'll touch on that later, they might have their own format. So really, broadly speaking, it's about a way of describing your activities, but not just what you've done, but how and why you've done them, the sort of context and thinking about the impact. So for the example that I think is easiest for me to explain might be if somebody refers to their teaching, they might say, oh, I taught three undergraduate modules, or no, I supervised a master's student. I particularly helped them with a bit of data analysis. Like, well, fine. But did you do that well? How do you know that they were able to use that form of data analysis in the next thing that they did? Or I taught somebody how to structure a paragraph properly. Well, that's great. You say that you did that, but did their essays improve afterwards? So narrative CV is a way of being able to talk about those things. That's a fairly basic example. People are much more creative with the kinds of things they put in, but that's an example I can get my head around at the moment. I hope that makes sense.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, I know that makes absolute sense. I think the UKRI format calls it a contribution, doesn't it? So how have you contributed to developing, you know, the people around you, or how have you contributed to the wider research sort of environment or whatever it might be?
Yeah, that's right.
So absolutely the impact. So I think, Kate, you touched on this a bit in your previous answer, but this idea of who's using them and what are they being used for, because I think when someone introduces something new, and obviously the UKRI have been piloting this approach for a few years now, there's always that sort of intake of breath, isn't there, where you wonder, is this going to stick? You know, are people going to embrace it and adopt it, or is it going to, you know, sort of peter out? And I think so it'd be really interesting, you know, as people who've who are working very much in the thick of this, to see, you know, where are people using it, and do you feel like it's growing as an approach?
Yes, for sure, is the easy answer to that question. It's definitely growing. So I think there are three ways that it's being used at the moment. Firstly, it's definitely being used for funding applications. So most funders will be asking you to submit a narrative CV, or indeed a team narrative CV. And again, we might touch on that later on. Slightly frightening document to have to think about. So funding applications is one. Secondly, we know that some places are using them for recruitment purposes. So, for example, the study that we're doing, we're inviting our participants need to submit a narrative CV for the postdocs that they're applying for. We noticed the University of Liverpool last year used narrative CVs for a particular round of fellowships which were postdoc roles basically that they had. So we've got funding, we've got recruitment, and then the third thing that we've got, the really great blog post by a colleague of Kay Guccione up at Glasgow, and they were talking about using narrative CV to help structure development conversations. So universities are talking about potentially using them for promotions, that kind of thing. So there's that kind of developmental way that narrative CVs are being thought about being used at the moment as well.
That's great. And I really like the idea of aligning, you know, how you're giving out the funding with how you're progressing and promoting the people that are overseeing, you know, using that funding.
Yeah.
And trying to bring those together a little bit.
Yeah, it would work if there was that kind of marrying potentially. Yeah, indeed.
Lovely. You mentioned there that the research that you're doing on narrative CVs, and Becky, I know you mentioned that at the beginning as one of the sort of strands of your research. So, Becky, would you like to tell me a bit more about the research that you're doing on narrative CVs?
Yeah, it's a really interesting study and a bit daunting to be studying a live recruitment. So I'll explain all the steps involved because we really want to do our best to limit the burden on participants as much as possible while still being able to get high quality data for our study. Mm-hmm. So what happens at the beginning is that any PI in Cambridge who's advertising for a postdoc is invited to participate in our study. So when they do, when they agree, that we add a few additional lines of text to their job advertisement, and we ask applicants to submit both a traditional CV and a narrative CV. And so then when the vacancy closes, the ARC team, we manipulate the application. So we show panel members only one of the CVs at random, and we ask each panel member individually to rank all of the candidates. So best candidates number one, second best candidates number two, et cetera. So once we've received those rankings back, we then show the panel members everything that the candidates submitted, and they rank the candidates again. So before any decisions are made on who's to interview, everything's been seen by everyone, but we can sort of judge whether there was a change in the rankings based on which CV type was seen first.
Right. Okay.
So then the recruitment proceeds as normal. The panel interviews who they want to interview, and we just find out the outcome at the end. Once that's all done, Kate, gratefully, as an incentive for applicants, she gives them feedback on their narrative CV. So she has read quite a lot of them at this point. It was fantastic. we also, from an interview, from a research perspective, we interview applicants and panel members at the end, because we're really interested in the experience of both writing a narrative CV and assessing a narrative CV.
That's brilliant. And wow, great to see so many narrative CVs, Kate.
That's indeed it is, yes. It's wonderful. Becky, you explained that really clearly. It's quite a complicated process. So
It is quite complicated. But I really like that, because I guess that's the question we've all got, isn't it? Is if we introduce the narrative CV, does it do what it was intended to do, which is to be more inclusive? So I know you're not at the end of this project yet. Can you tell us anything about your findings so far?
Yeah, we can tell you a few things. Indeed, we still do need to collect more data to be able to say anything definitive. We just have not been able to detect quantitatively whether CV type does make a difference in who gets shortlisted. Appreciating too that it's that shortlisting decision is the thing that we're really looking at, because if you don't get invited to interview, it doesn't really matter whether or not your CV made you go higher in the ranks, but it's who gets invited to the interview or doesn't. We have the interviews that we've done so far with applicants and panel members there have been some interesting trends we've just started to see. Again, in essence, the narrative CV seems to be combating certain biases against perhaps institutional prestige or against certain metrics like that may be visible in a publication list. It may address some of those biases, perhaps, but it may also introduce different kinds of bias. For example, bias against non-native English speakers or against people who aren't as comfortable boasting about themselves, promoting themselves. Some people have told us they feel a lot more comfortable with the bullet list. It's very factual and evidenced about what they've done. So these are some sort of themes we're interested in picking up further. Panel members have also told us perhaps the postdoc role in particular is maybe not the best suited for a narrative CV because some PIs recruiting are really interested in a specific skills profile to deliver a specific project. Yes.
And so the technical skills required.
Because and without that's those, really all they're interested
in. You can't
in.
Do it.
Right. And the narrative CV, by its narrative nature, can make it just harder to find the information that they're looking for.
Yes.
But I think that's opens a really interesting opportunity for debate about if that's what the sector need, what the sector needs, and what the individual actors in that sector are trying to do.
No, that's really interesting, and it sounds as though, as with all these things, it will be context dependent and work maybe better in some situations than others, and it's about working out where it's most useful, I suppose.
I think something that's quite interesting is that part of the project is going out and talking to people about narrative CVs and the rationale behind them and all the context and all the rest of it. And what we are observing is that it's getting the conversation started, or it's enabling more of these conversations about it. And there's a really great blog post from the LSE talking about, you know, it sort of lists the various reasons that have been given by funders for bringing these things in. And then it says at the end precisely this: it means that we're talking about this stuff, for better or worse. And so, in effect, that's probably a good thing that we're talking.
It's still progress.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So, and actually, Becky, I think what you noticed in some of the interviews was that candidates were reasonably interested in doing a narrative CV because they kind of saw the purpose behind it. They were quite, you know, they noticed that it was an attempt it gave a little insight for them into what the PI was thinking about research culture and all the rest. So we have observed that as well, which is quite interesting.
That's really nice. Yeah, and I think you've both been mentioning some links, so we'll try and make sure those are in the notes of the podcast as well. So Becky, I gather from you both when we were talking beforehand that you had to write a narrative CV to get your current role at ARC. So as we've got you here, would you like to tell us a bit about what it was like to actually write one?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I'd say it was overall a good experience, albeit a bit daunting because it's new, but like everything can be a little bit uncomfortable the first time you do it. So that's just life. But it's a document. It's not too scary. I'd say for me in particular, especially because I have a bit of already a non-traditional career trajectory, a path I've followed so far. There were some sections where I did feel a little bit vulnerable, like the fact that the resume for research and innovation, the narrative CV format that's being most commonly used across the UK, it asks for information in these four different areas. And so just by virtue, some sections are shorter than others because I just have more to say in some areas and not others. And that can, it feels a little vulnerable, but it's just, that's just what my profile looks like at the moment. And what it does mean is it really served as a nice prompt, I guess. Once I did get this job, I thought, oh, how can I use this 3-year job that I have to build up experience in those areas? So next time I write one at the end of this role, I can flesh out those sections a bit more with experience I've gained more recently.
I think that's a really good point, Becky. And so nice to hear about your experience of filling one in. But absolutely, I think particularly if we're supporting people who might be at the early stages of their researcher career, getting an idea for how you're going to be assessed and what you're going to be assessed against is really important, isn't it? And if you can use that as a kind of framework and think, right, how, what evidence have I got for developing others? What evidence have I got for contributing to broader society? You know, all of those things, then, you know, you can start to be a bit more strategic about which opportunities you choose.
Definitely. But also like the recognition too, that as an early career researcher, I don't expect my CV to each section to be a beautifully crafted novel. Like I'm at the start of my journey. So the sections are going to be kind of short. Great. There's space for more potential as my career develops. So I try not to get anxious about that.
No, absolutely. And I think and also that goes back to what you were saying before, doesn't it? About, you know, the narrative CV, I think, is great in how it's concentrating more on sort of trying to develop that positive research environment. But also those technical skills remain important. And, you know, you can't have one without the other, can you, in research? They've kind of got to go hand in hand.
So I think the thing about the sections is really interesting, and this is yet to be tested in terms of us trying to find out from funders really what they think about if people haven't got much in each of those four boxes of the resume for researchers template. So UKRI says on its website at the moment that it doesn't matter if you haven't got things for all four of those categories. And, you know, I recently did a workshop with somebody from the Swiss National Funder, and if you remember, they have to do three achievements, and somebody in the audience says, can one of those achievements not be writing a paper? I guess traditionally perhaps all three of them would have been writing a paper, and the guy from the fund was like, yeah, it could be anything. You know, it could be any of those things. And the people, they were postdocs in the audience, and they were you could hear the skepticism in the room when he said it could be anything. And I think that's probably what we're feeling at the moment a bit about people saying, oh, it doesn't matter if you haven't got everything for the four sections. I think we're feeling a bit like, oh, we'd like to see that in practice, really. But, you know, I think my take on the four sections is it's this idea of kind of extracting what you've done from your experiences based on where you are at your career stage. So maybe, so the fourth one at the moment, the fourth one is, you know, impact on broader society. And probably early career researchers haven't, you know, created a government endorsed policy, but they might have done something for their local area through Pint of Science or through some kind of engagement activity. So it will be at your scale and your career stage that those things will make sense. Becky said something, I think, about taking time to write it because it was a new document. And the guy in Luxembourg, who's a very big proponent of narrative CVs, he's done two sets of qualitative or evaluation research, I should say. And his second piece of research showed that people are taking less time now to write these narrative CVs. So that suggests that you get familiar with it, it gets easier to do each time you're doing it. So that's another link that we can pop in the notes as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So are you essentially saying from about your research and experiences so far that traditional CVs, well, narrative CVs are not showing to be any less subjective than a traditional CV, which we also know are subjective?
Yeah. There's different biases in each is what we're basically saying. Yeah, because everything's in the eye of the beholder as much as it can be, isn't it? So there are different biases is what we're thinking at the moment.
And I think some of what you're saying, Kate, picks up on that. Sort of, I think something that's sort of underlying a lot of this conversation around research culture, which is how much can researchers trust that the things that are now being said are important. So, for example, if you were to put a lot of your efforts into public engagement and you didn't have as many publications, would that actually be seen? You know, would you compare as favorably to someone who's got a different profile? And I guess we're not quite sure about that yet.
Certainly our research can't show that at the moment. No.
But I think that's a broader
Absolutely.
Things happening across research, isn't it?
Yeah. And it's fair to say that UKRI, Becky, correct me if I'm wrong, they're about to be commissioning a piece of evaluation work looking at narrative CVs. So I guess that's another watch this space thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I suppose I have to ask this question, particularly as you've seen so many, Kate, and I'm sure have also given some very good feedback, because I've seen your feedback and it's marvellous. So do you know what good looks like? You know, if you are a researcher listening to this podcast and you've got this far.
stick with us, guys.
Right. The magic going. The magic potion.
And you think that you're going to have to write one. What are your tips for writing one? Is there anything that you know about what good does look like?
Well, fortunately, our colleagues at Oxford have written a fantastic piece of guidance. So my first tip would be go and read the Oxford guidance. But then really, from having read these things, it really does help if you I think the best ones that I've read have maybe had two or three points that they've tried to convey in each of the sections. And they've just managed to be very clear in the way that they write. They're not necessarily boasting. They are being quite factual. I have done this. I did it this way because, and this is what happened as a result of. So just being really quite structured about what they've said, putting in metrics where it's possible to put in metrics, putting in bits of feedback. And to be honest, it's the same kind of feedback that we would give on a traditional style CV. Just be use quite active language where you can. Pick two or three things, be very structured, and I would really say get somebody to work with it on you, because I think I spoke with a researcher whose background was from Uganda, and she said she would really struggle to notice the things about her job that would fit into these four boxes. So I would say work with somebody else that you trust, and whether that's somebody like you and me, Anna, a careers consultant for researchers, somebody, a peer in your group, whatever it, you know, somebody to really help you tease through all of the things that you've done, literally map them out. And when I do workshops, we just have an online notice board, and we just put everybody puts their evidence in each of boxes 1, 2, 3, 4. So you can get inspired by what other people have put and think, oh, yeah, oh, goodness. Oh, they've put that there. Well, they've put that there. Interesting. So work with somebody else. And then, you know, try and construct a good paragraph. So I think the ones that I've read, they've shown a little bit of personality to them.
Yeah.
They've been quite authentic, which sounds, I know it sounds a little bit naff and it's very hard to describe, but you can just get a little bit of a sense of the person from that. And again, that could be my cultural bias. Maybe I like to be slightly, entertained is too strong a word, but like to have too much, a little bit of an insight into the person that I'm reading about. But, you know, I think it brings it alive a little bit. So, and I think particularly because the ones that I've mainly looked at have been postdocs, so early career researcher people, particularly, you know, being reasonably honest and authentic in that the fourth box, the impact on society, you know, quantify, putting some context. In my world, this is important because, and I've done those things. A couple of people have brought in outside work that they've done. So couple of people have brought voluntary work, for example, into that, which they deemed had, because the question is, what have your contributions been? Doesn't necessarily mean research contributions, potentially. So they've brought outside things into that section. So, yeah. Being clear, being succinct, working with somebody else, using quite strong, active language, and having a little sense of you as a person.
Yeah, I think all good tips.
Thank you. Good.
All good tips.
Also use the Oxford guidance as well.
Yeah. And we're going to put some links in, but there are various things, aren't there, that go through how to put together a narrative Z. And I also think, often in institutions, if you ask your department or faculty, the people in charge of sort of supporting research will have a bank of successful funding applications, which will increasingly include a narrative CV. So if you're lucky, you can also get access to those.
Absolutely. So the research councils and other funders are being very strong and strict at the moment on not having examples of best practice. One of the reasons for them saying that, and I, you know, we can get behind this, is that they don't want to put limits on what people think they should put in by having an exemplar up there. which I guess is reasonable. But you could go and have a look at the PEP CV peer sharing platform. So it's been funded by the EU. I think UKRI might have put some money in as well, and the Marie Curie Alumni Association. So if you have a narrative CV, you can upload it, get yourself a kind of peer buddy thing through that platform, and then see what somebody else has written and get a bit of help that way. You don't have to be on a Marie Curie fellowship or anything to access that. So that is available. And I believe it's got over 200 shares at the moment. So it's something that's there.
Oh, that's great. I didn't know about that one. That's really nice. And we did say that we would talk a little bit about team narrative CVs, which I believe are still sort of two pages, aren't they? Not usually any longer.
Yeah.
So you've got to be quite focused in what you write about. Do you have any tips for those?
So bless Oxford, they've got something about it. So go and have a look at the Oxford website. Definitely. You go to their research hub. I've spoken with the research facilitators here at Cambridge, and one of them has had experience of helping people, groups put these things together. It seems to me the really big key thing is to allow lots of time, because you need to have time going back and forth with the members of the group, deciding who's got the best evidence for which module. Thinking about, you know, literally which voice do you use. So on one of the workshops I've done, somebody put one in the chat, and one researcher had used I and the other researcher had used he, she, you know, first voice, third voice, which, so, you know, agree those sorts of things. I think it's really important that more junior researchers obviously have their space to be able to contribute in the team CVs. That's the point of it, is to show that sort of spread. So, it definitely takes time. And I know that researchers are often applying for funding very much up against the wire. But I think a team CV, you have to build in that time for collective collaboration on these things.
Yeah, that's great advice. Thank you. So we've mentioned the Oxford resources. Obviously, if you're a King's researcher, you can look at our Keats pages, where we've got some online resources for putting a narrative CV together. And there's also some resources in the in the research culture team section. But for anyone not in King's, do you have other general resources you'd recommend?
Kate has actually done a lot of work to pull together lots of, you know, frequently asked questions. You can find those on our project website. And again, a collection of, you know, her favorite resources are highlighted on our project website as well. So we'll pop that.
Yeah, and I saw the PDF. That looks great.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of chat on LinkedIn if anyone wants to follow the ARC project there. And we'll put there's going to be a lot of links in these notes, I feel.
So if people do have questions, please, you know, send them to us and we'll try and include those in our FAQs. But in terms of additional resources, the original University of Glasgow video is still really good.
Yeah,
you know,
really
it's 2021,
good.
But they kind of had a group of postdocs that they basically gave the challenge of writing a narrative CV to, and it sort of talks through how they went about doing that. So I think that's really worth looking at. And there's a nice podcast from Alzheimer's Research. Presumably you like podcasts if you're listening to this one, so do go and take a look at that one as well. But I think that this podcast, Anna, I'm really glad that you've done it, and I really hope that you can, and between us all, we can get lots of people listening to it, because I really do believe that it's important that there's equity of access to information about this. You said right at the beginning that some people, even at King's, hadn't heard about this, and I know all of the resources that there will be available for people there, but it's really important to us that researchers who don't have the kind of backing and resource that that people who are at Cambridge or King's have are able to get help. So whatever we can do to amplify this podcast for you, we'd really love to do that. So it's really important to us that we spread this as much as we possibly can.
Oh, that's great. Oh, thank you. Well, it's been great having you on, and I absolutely agree. I think it's really important that everybody knows. And I think also in terms of that career development aspect, that people are aware very early on what they're going to be assessed against and therefore can prepare for that too. Thank you very much for sharing your thoughts and insights with us. I'll be coming to you for all those lovely links that we can add
yes,
to the notes. And for our audience, thank you very much for listening to this episode, and join us next time on Careers in Your Ears when we'll be continuing our exploration of researchers' careers.